Simply see that you are at the center of the universe and accept all things and beings as parts of your infinite body. When you perceive that an act done to another is done to yourself, you have understood the great truth. Lao Tzu.
Welcome to the Lost Traveler Podcast. I am your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And today I have a very special guest. We are meeting now for the first time, our first connection, which is really exciting for me. I'm excited to dig into your story and your background and your future, what you're envisioning for your future. This is John Mendez, everybody. And he is the host of the Walk to Wealth Podcast. And he's an entrepreneur, and he's involved in real estate and social media and so many different layers. And you're quite young, I have to say. I mean, I'm saying this as an old man, but welcome anyway. I'm really excited to have you and have your voice in this conversation about universal life skills.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here, excited for the opportunity, and I'm excited to see, you know, where this conversation takes us today.
Very cool. So you're based in Connecticut, you mentioned earlier to me.
Yeah.
And born and raised there.
Mm-hmm.
What was the spark that ignited your journey?
Yeah. So I say from as early on as I can remember.
Yeah.
I never had this entrepreneurial bug in me. A lot of people say you're born with it. I feel like I wasn't. I had friends that, you know, sold sneakers and flipped sneakers and things like that. I had entrepreneur friends. But for me, it wasn't. I was a pretty normal kid. I feel like I was generally always a few years ahead of people my age in terms of mentally. Not academically. I was also very smart in school. But just my outlook on life earlier on in life was always a little different from my peers. And just as I started growing older, that started, you know, becoming more and more, the gap became more and more evident. But for me, what really sparked this entire journey where I really started getting intentional with my life was I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And for me, that book is not the best book that I read, but it's the book that I needed to read at that time for who I was at that time. Because it's so easy to comprehend the principles that the book talks about. And there was a lot that resonated with me in terms of how the poor dad viewed the world and how my grandparents raised me. And that you know, that similarity made me question, okay, there's also a rich dad in the book. There's people out there that view the world in this way. Mm. And that kind of sparked my curiosity bug. And from there, I started, you know, I jumped down the rabbit hole of, you know, looking up personal finance. I was, you know, reading books and YouTubing and, you know, double X speed, all my podcasts and YouTube videos. And I was just, you know, eating and consuming information, just trying to figure out, you know, how to become financially literate and, you know, how to get into entrepreneurship and things like that. Because up to that point, I was never taught anything that really mattered. I had like this one personal finance class in high school. And by really mattered, I'm not saying that other subjects are less important. I just mean,
right.
No, we have to file taxes. You know, we have to, you know, pay our bills. We have the things like that practical stuff, right? Like that everyone has to, for the most part, you know, take care of, like putting food on the table, things like that, managing your money, things like that. I never heard of in school, really, aside for that one personal finance class. And I was in college at that time in university. And so it was that winter break between my sophomore semesters. And I came back after the spring semester, after jumping down this rabbit hole, and it's like I seen the light and I couldn't unsee it. I couldn't, you know, force myself to be, you know, willfully blind anymore. I was like, there's a whole nother world out there that I could teach myself more, you know, things that actually are, you know, practical that I'm going to use, because I want to get into business as well. So I can learn more practical, useful business and entrepreneurship information by teaching myself, save my money. I went to school to learn how to network and live my own. I'm in the middle of the pandemic. Everyone's still online taking classes, so I can't network or live on my own. I'm living from my house. You know, I'm still in my grandparents' house. Yeah. So the two reasons I went into college were already out the window. Now I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, jumped down the rabbit hole. And like coming back that spring semester, I was just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm a bet on myself. And I stopped showing up to my college classes and signed up for my real estate class.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, so many of the people that I've interviewed have shared that their journey started with a book.
Yeah.
And that's always impressive to me. And I always put in the description a link to that book that inspired you so that maybe there's another person out there who is flailing and not knowing what direction to take with their lives, not knowing how to meet or manage money. I think that, you know, one of the things as a universal life skills educator, mentor, which has been a long career for me, for you know, and it was because I didn't get those things, just like you. Mm-hmm. It's sad to me that we're still having this conversation. That, you know, I'm impressed that your high school offered a personal finance course because many, many don't. When I talk about universal life skills, I'm talking about financial literacy. I'm talking mm-hmm. about communication skills. I'm talking about self-awareness and grief in all its levels and hygiene and nutrition and, you know, sexual literacy, all those things that we learn.
Yeah. Right?
We learn these things regardless of where you came from or where your ancestors were from or, you know, where you sprung from. In the world, we are all learning the same skills, every single one of us, 8 billion on the planet now.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is not whether we learn them, it's how well do we learn them and from whom are we learning them?
Yeah. Right?
Because there are a lot of people who don't have these skills at a level that's teachable. And I think, you know, as somebody who has been a parent, has been an uncle, has been a friend to young people my whole life, I feel a responsibility, not mm-hmm. a sad or a hard burden of responsibility, but I've always been painfully aware that young eyes are upon me for how to be in the world.
Yeah.
And so if I didn't gain proficiency in all those skills and more that I mentioned, where are these kids learning? And so when I've interviewed a lot of millennials, for instance, you know, where did you learn your life skills?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it takes a while to lead them down the conversation about what are life skills.
Yeah.
You know, what does that mean? It's not something we talk about.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At BluntReflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at BluntReflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blasé, blasé means to tell your story.
But where did you learn your life skills? You say your grandparents raised you, yeah?
Yeah, so I'll get a little bit into detail around that. So I grew up nine of us in a two-bedroom. We grew up in the projects. And for me, my mother, me and her never had a relationship. For when I was younger, I didn't know that she was suffering from mental like health issues, like anxiety, depression, things like that.
So
like for me, like I was a kid, only thing I understood was she wasn't the mom I needed her to be or wanted her to be. Right. So as I got older, I realized that our relationship still isn't the better. I understand now though, you know, but, why she couldn't be the mother I wanted or needed when I was younger. But when I was younger, I didn't understand that. So me and her never had a great relationship growing up. And then as I got, my father also was very absent. And then my grandparents don't speak any English. They only speak Spanish, right? So I grew up in a Dominican household. And for me, yeah. So that's how I get my flavor, I like to say.
Your flavor. Yeah. Yes.
And so growing up, I never had a role model. And I would always ask questions in school sometimes. Like I remember like in kindergarten, first grade, things like that. You know, who's your role model? Who do you want to be when you grow up?
Right.
And for me, I put my grandmother because I couldn't as a placeholder, I guess you could say, but I really genuinely never had a role model per se. And for me, it was more so what I did was I just try to take all the good values and traits that I seen from people and leave out all the negative traits that I didn't want to put into my life. And so I kind of became this melting pot of all these different perspectives. And, you know, I gained this really an open mind around, you know, perspectives and how people live life and how I want to live mine. And I never really knew how I wanted to live mine, but from being so open-minded, I knew exactly what I didn't want to be like.
Yeah.
And then that kind of all played out into as I got older. And then once I got into, as I said, around like, I guess, middle school to high school, that's when occasionally we'll do like a philosophical chairs or something like that. I think that's what it's called, where we would have a topic like ice cream or pizza. And I would intentionally see which side had less people on it just so I could argue. So I'm a pizza guy, but I would sometimes go on the ice cream side if there were not a lot of people on the ice cream side, simply for the fact that I wanted to step into those shoes and argue that point and get into different perspectives. And that's what that, you know, kind of combined with like not having a role model and being open-minded helped me really to pick up a lot of things. And I genuinely feel like you can learn anything from everyone. And this is kind of a very extreme example.
Yeah.
But let's say someone who's very polarized, someone that everyone hates, let's say Hitler, right? If you were to sit down with him,
the go-to, across,
yeah, someone that everyone just hates, right? But everyone knows him. He's very infamous. But it's like, if you were to sit down and talk to him, you could probably learn a thing or two or three if you had an open mind. And I feel like now a lot of people are closed off because if you don't agree with someone, it's like their point isn't valued or, you know, isn't, I guess, important anymore. And it's always good to have opposing perspectives, because it allows you to keep continue on growing. It keeps your mind open. It gives you new ideas. And sometimes you may actually be in the wrong. Sometimes you may be in the right. It may justify that you're actually right. Or sometimes you might justify that, you know, there's no one right way to look at it, right? A 6 to you might be a 9 to me, depending on which side we're standing. And so kind of just growing up like that, keeping an open mind, grew up in a church as well. So like all these different things, you know, kind of played a factor and kind of molded me. I get bits and pieces from all these different people. So when I, you know, I make it in life and people ask, hey, John, who's that one person? I can't say, I can't point my finger really. You know, if I really tried hard, of course, there's some people that played more of an impact in my life, of course, but I'm really a giant accumulation of all the people that I've been able to come in contact with.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. And I think that I can resonate with a lot of that. I grew up in a difficult situation, not financially, but emotionally. And very often, you know, there's that old adage, when the student is ready, the master appears. And sometimes our greatest masters are not the people who we look up to, but the people who reveal to us how we don't want to be in the world, how we don't want to walk in the world, or how to avoid some of the pitfalls that our parents and our grandparents and their parents might have fallen into based on socioeconomic status, based on religion, you know, based on, you know, their own experiences in the foundation years of their lives. And, you know, I also, like you, I didn't feel like I had a lot of people that I would consider to be role models. Not that they were bad people around me. I never doubted their love for me. But it was kind of a skewed perspective of what I considered to be healthy love coming from parents, coming from grandparents and so forth. And I think the ancestors rejoice when somebody down the line decides to heal the problems, you know, that have plagued generationally. Do you ever think about your ancestors? Do you ever think about generationally the challenges, the traumas that live in your DNA today that might, you know? And I'm sure you see, having grown up in the projects, you see a lot of people around you who have gone down very dark roads of only self-destruction, but destruction to other people. I certainly was at those crossroads in my youth.
Yeah.
It was a pivotal moment that changed the course of my entire life. but I'll tell you about that in a minute.
So for me, I'd say growing up in the projects, the beauty of it is that I was aware. And there's a certain level of street march. I was never involved in any of the antics, but knowing people that are, it kind of shows you that for example, but I also had friends who had summer houses in the Hamptons,
right,
in New York City, right, and or in New York, right. So it's like, but then I also have friends who, you know, are might be doing life. So it's like, it's very weird seeing both sides of the coin, and it's like very drastic, you know, differences between going to the Hamptons and then, you know, the lifestyle of people, you know, sentenced to 25 plus. And so it's that kind of, you know, growing up in the project, it makes you aware of the hardships in life. And it gives you an edge on a lot of people that grew up on, you know, going to private schools and, you know, have, you know, wealth inside. And for me, like, I actually, it's a great question because I genuinely never took the time really to think back. And if I'm making assumptions, of course, poverty it is. It's, you know, written all over. Of course, you know, the gossiping, I don't know where, but it's like everyone in my culture, it's like we'll go to a party and by the second everyone walks out, it instantly picks up. So like those are two like that I picked up on very early on. Just in the way they ego is another thing. Egos are super huge. I mean, I'm not sure how much is this is like, you know, passed down like heretically and passed down like just culturally.
Yeah.
But it's really a great question to ask because I think for the most part, my grandparents, they also immigrated here back about, I think it was about maybe 20 years before I was born. Mm-hmm. So I'm 21. So maybe like 30 years ago, I think, maybe less. Yeah.
Not that long ago. I mean,
yeah. And from them, as I said, they still don't speak it like English, but like, I don't know, being able to take that jump, that risk is something that I probably should ask them. I never really asked them growing up because my Spanish, although I speak a lot more fluently now, growing up, it wasn't the best. I couldn't get into deep conversation, which is also played. And this is like a separate tangent, but that's part of the reason why I was so open-minded and didn't have any role models because at home I felt isolated. And you mentioned earlier too, like growing up in an emotionally, you know, not the best environment for me. Like for me, I felt isolated and closed off a lot because imagine being flustered. You already know how hard it is to express yourself and explain what you want to get across when you're flustered and angry. Now imagine trying to do that in a language that isn't your best language. It's like you flustered and then you messed up what you want to say. So then you get even more flustered and then it's like, screw it. I don't even want to talk at all.
Exactly.
Like after a while, you just never, ever talk. You just close off.
A guy wire is a tensioned cable that is designed to enhance the stability of a freestanding structure. Think of me as your guy wire. In terms of life skills mentoring, you're perfectly capable of standing stably on your own two feet. But I'm a cable that can enhance your stability. I'm available for individual or couples counseling, life skills mentorship, child loss grief support, LGBTQ+ support. I can also officiate weddings, end-of-life ceremonies, baby namings, invocations, or whatever guidance you may need. I serve all genders, all ages. Sessions are affordable, discreet, private, and conducted online. Find me at guy-wire.org. Book your appointment today. I totally relate to that. I'm the middle child of three. And I felt as a kid growing up that I was either scapegoated, I got the brunt of everybody's shit, or I was ignored. And I much preferred to be ignored, you know, because that left me to my own devices. Like you, I was an observer, I was a listener, I was sort of, you know, figuring out the human condition by what I saw and experienced and sensed around me. We have more than five senses. Hello.
Yeah.
We have the sense of danger. We have a sense of beauty. We have a sense of goodness and truth and all of these things that are part of the human mechanism that are not taught, that are not guided in our youth. And good on you that you were able to find that place. And I really, I believe this, and now I'm you know, you're 21, I'm 56.
Yeah.
So So I've been around the block a few times. And what I've discovered in my journey is that my ancestry really informs who I am. Everyone who I have a blood connection to.
Yeah.
Back to the first human out of Africa.
Yeah.
Has an influence on who I am as a whole being, right? We carry ancestral memory. There's a whole science dedicated to this now, called epigenetics, where
I literally heard about this a week ago. I need to do some more digging, but I literally just found out about that about a week ago from the time we're recording this, and I haven't got a chance to look into it yet. But
I think it's fascinating on this journey of self-discovery and also being a voice box for the voiceless in the world, right? Which I think podcasters are. We lend voice to topics, to subjects, to, you know, we're sort of guideposts along the journey for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I find great gratification in that, in being of service. You know, you mentioned you were listening to the last episode of the Lost Traveler podcast, where we were talking about loss.
Yeah.
And I lost my only child, my son, Cameron, to brain cancer when he was 13. And boy, does that pluck you out of yourself with a capital S, you know, and set you on a completely different core. But I channel my grief into service. And this podcast is one of those ways. Where do you find your direction in the vision that you know, with the challenges that you've had in your foundation, the fact that you've been able to somehow, where some of your peers have not been able to, I don't care where they fall on the economic spectrum, right? Because there are a lot of people living in the Hamptons who have a lot of problems, and there are a lot of people in the projects, even in prison, who are actually better off, you know, in their mindset. Where do you see yourself channeling the wisdom that you've gleaned in the last couple decades of life that you want to take forward and build upon?
Yeah. So for me, and before I start, I feel, genuinely sorry for, your loss. I'm still naive to the world in a way where I haven't experienced a loss yet. So it's I still haven't, it's something that I think about occasionally and kind of get scared to think about. I know it's inevitable, and not scared because, I don't think that they're going to a better place, but it's more so scared because I know that's going to impact me. And I just hope that I'm strong enough. There's a guy that once said, be strong enough to be the shoulder that everyone cries at the funeral. And I just hope that I'm strong enough to be that person. So that
part of that strength is building up a shield to not absorb what other people are going through. I think I'm a shoulder. I'm a really strong shoulder. Been there for a lot of people, but I had to cultivate the skill.
Yeah.
Protecting my core so that, because I'm what would be considered an empath, somebody who feels what other people are feeling, and I feel it in every cell.
Yeah.
Whether I have a friend who's suffering or, a family member or, even if somebody passes away in my town, I feel the grief around me, and I feel it nationally. I feel it globally. So I have to figure out, how do I protect myself so I don't get dragged down into other people's grief, other people's challenges, other people's journeys. So I just wanted to offer that out there because that's a skill that's not taught. And I think we need to be teaching it. We need to be talking about it.
Yeah, definitely.
But absolutely, I think you're right that inner strength, finding that strength is so important.
And then to answer the question, for me, I feel like my faith has a lot to do with, the wisdom I got. I feel like personally, not to get too much into religion, but I feel like God blesses everyone with gifts. And for me personally, God has blessed me with the gift of wisdom. So I think that's what led to my open-mindedness. And then there's a quote that I love. It's, the reason I see further than most is because I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. Right. So it's I've just been able to meet a ton of, really great people and be open-minded enough to listen to these people and then have a good enough memory to remember what they said and what they've taught me, and try to implement that what I can and what's applicable in my life, and so that I could then speak that to others. And for me, I think what really gets me going, as I said, I know how hard it was for the pandemic for a lot of people, but for me, it was the greatest time of my life because I found direction, right? And that I found something to get after. And for me, I know how many videos I had to watch, and you know, I know how I maxed out credit cards and things like that. And I didn't, you know, go like bankrupt or anything crazy. I didn't lose $1 million, but you know, I had to learn a lot of this stuff from videos and just on my own kind of, and it takes some time. So it's like, you know, if you're two steps ahead of someone, or, you know, you could help them out, and everyone should be, you know, have a coach and be a coach to someone else, or have a mentor, be a mentor to someone else. And like, for me, I always knew what kind of, I didn't want to wait to become successful to start giving back. I kind of wanted to find my way where I can kind of document my journey, but also give back at the same time. And podcasting was the best medium to do so. Yep. And I also get access to meet, you know, tons of amazing people from, you know, tons of, you said you're in Spain, I'm in Connecticut. We're not even in the same time zone, not even the same side of the ocean, right? So it's like, we're extremely far away, and you're able to connect with people and, you know, gain more new perspectives, make more great connections, things like that. And it's like, if people knew how, I wouldn't say easy, but I would say simple it was to achieve success in life. And if we just adopted a different way of viewing things, because that's where it all starts. You know, everyone says it, whether, you know, you have a quantum physics guy, or, you know, a scientist, or, you know, a preacher or whatever. It starts with yourself, right? It starts within, right? No matter which, you know, way you want to look at it, and just helping people from what I learned, you know, to realize that anything is truly possible. And you get around some people that have like me, who have like contagious optimism, I like to call it. It's like, I can't let someone walk away from me without feeling like they can conquer the world.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. A thought just came to me about, you know, the value of travel. And, you know, I was very fortunate in my youth that my father worked for the U.S. government, State Department. He was a diplomat. And so I traveled all around the world growing up. So I was privy to different perspectives and, you know, the differences amongst cultures and languages and flavors and all of that. But I also became aware quite young of the common ground that we share as human beings, that we are more alike than not. We all fear, we all rejoice, we all have faith in something, even when it's nothing.
Yeah. Right?
Even if you don't believe in anything, you believe in that nothing is something.
Yeah.
You know, I do want to delve into the conversation about the impact of religious teaching on a person's journey, especially in a time where there has been so much now revealed. I mean, as you were saying, the internet is the portal for all kinds of things. And, you know, I don't care how old you are, it does take a certain amount of skill building to sort out what is true, what is not, what is manipulation, what is actual fact, fiction. And I think, you know, especially, you know, thinking in most Latin cultures that I've been in, you have a lot of evangelical Christians.
Yeah.
Have a lot of Catholics as well, a lot of Roman Catholics. The tiny village that I live in a very remote part of Spain, only 700 people in my entire village. The center of the village is this huge Catholic cathedral that's been here. I mean, this village was settled in 1228 AD. The history. People who live in America or in the Americas really have very little sense of the breadth of history that you get just walking down the street here in Europe. And so I wanted to, you know, I look at the Catholic community that I live in, and I'm raised Jewish, right? So I don't have that perspective.
Yeah.
I don't even have the same faith. And so, and you know, identify culturally as Jewish. I don't follow a particular, you know, religious dogma or ritual. Experienced too much in my life to lead me down a path of believing that my faith is the faith and the way.
Yeah.
The one way that everybody should believe. And if they don't believe the way I believe, they're all going to hell, right?
Yeah.
That's not where I live. And so, you know, and plus there's been a lot of controversy coming out of religion, you know, abuses, manipulations, both personally with children.
Yeah.
No better. They don't have those things in place yet to know what's right and wrong. And also economically, you know, and again, I don't want to broad brush anything. I'm really interested in your personal journey through faith experience.
So for me, I'm not a theologist by any stretch of the imagination, but my grandparents, I believe, and my family for the most part, I believe is Catholic. I've never seen any of them ever go to a church, but when we go to, you know, gatherings like Thanksgiving and things like that, they always were like in unison, like, you know, blessing the food and things like that. They always bless the food in Spanish, and they would all know the words to each prayer in unison. It's like they were a band almost. Like they all knew the songs, like the lyrics to the prayer, right? It was like in unison. As soon as it's time for bless the food, they all knew the same prayers. So I'm not too sure why that is, but growing up, I didn't really understand, you know, what on earth they were saying, honestly. I knew they were praying. I knew they were, you know, Catholic. Yeah. But I didn't really understand what they were saying. And for me, it was my first experience going to church, a Christian church, or any church in general, any religion in general, was really, I believe in second or third grade. And this one girl who was my neighbor, I was still in the projects, and she was going to this church called the Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm.
And they were coming every Friday. They had like a fun Friday, which was like not their normal like Sunday, you know, church session or whatever. It was like more so for like for the kids, for the youth. They get them together, you know, teach them a little Bible verse or something like that. Let us play, you know, the GameCube. We always used to play Super Smash and things like that. So that was my introduction. It wasn't actually to go to church, but eventually they started picking me up for Sunday. We didn't have a car growing up, so they would come around and they would pick us up here in the projects, and they would like loop around and everyone would come in, you get picked up, and we would head off to the church on Sunday. And that's when I started going, and for me, it instilled a lot of values in myself that I hold to my day. For example, like male promiscuity, or promiscuity in general, is something that I believe, you know, shouldn't be. I feel like, for example, sex, on the topic of sex, that's something that is a spiritual connection that you're making with someone. And regardless of our biological, for example, like men, biologically speaking, they're more wired to be able to have multiple partners and be okay with that. Whereas women, they make more of an emotional connection with someone when they release, when they orgasm and stuff like that. So it's like a different biologically, but like spiritually speaking, it's the same, regardless of whatever biological factor. I feel like spiritually speaking, no one should be promiscuous, right? Because you entangle yourself with that person spiritually, and then all their people you're connected to. So it only takes a couple partners before you're in this big giant web of, you know, entanglement kind of, and I feel like you give up a part of yourself. So you do that enough times, there's going to be a hole in your heart that you haven't realized, a hole in yourself, that a void kind of that you're seeking to fill, and you're never going to be able to fill it, and you're never going to know why. But so for me, like, promiscuity is one thing that I was easy to avoid. I was, you know, I'd say around 10th grade years when I started gaining my handsomeness, puberty started working out in my favor.
Yeah.
And like for me, like people would understand, like in the conversations people would have, it's just like, yeah, you know, for typical high school dude, it's like, oh yeah, that girl, this girl, whatever. And it's like a trophy. Like they don't, but like for me, like those conversations were never appealing to me. And then also too, on the topic of like, for example, I learned the importance of, you know, what you put into your head and how that can affect your way you would think. So like I stopped watching scary movies. And not because I was scared, but because that opens the gateways of your door to imagining, and our imagination is insanely powerful, Right? That's why everyone talks about visualization and manifestation, all that stuff. Our minds are insanely powerful. And the way our brain is wired, it can't tell the difference between what is reality and what's just a thought.
Oh, man. And there's no more important time to start being aware of that than if you are around young kids. Because what people realize is that a child at the age of 3 is capable of creating whole worlds in their imagination. And if we stick them in front of a machine or even a picture book that says, this is what a princess looks like, this is what a castle looks like, this is what a dragon looks like. When, if you just tell them the story, they will form those images in their own minds. Creativity, imagination is a muscle. Yeah. It's a muscle and you need to work it. Just like when you go to the, you know, YMCA or whatever, you're working out your physical body. We need to start working out our imaginations. And I think you're absolutely right. That instinct was absolutely right.
Your generous sponsorship and individual support of the Lost Traveler podcast benefits the Lost Travelers Club, a charitable project under the fiscal sponsorship of United Charitable, a nonprofit 501c3 organization. The Lost Travelers Club focuses primarily on the needs of parents who have outlived their beloved children. We recently launched our new Brain Candy Project Wing, providing art supplies to children still struggling with critical or terminal health-related conditions. We hope to raise enough funds to launch Brain Candy, an arts and literature magazine created by and for these young people. Find out more at www.braincandy.online. Thank you.
Yeah, there's something, you know, for me as a theater artist, I've also done some film, both as an actor and a director, mostly a director now.
Yeah.
But I'm fascinated with the tech behind, you know, makeup and special effects and, you know, the difference between, like, I love old silent movies from the 19-teens and the 20s. Yeah. Right before they put sound into film, you go back there and it's like going back in a time machine with all that stuff. There were horror movies 100 years ago, right? And they were freaking scary. Why? Not because of the blood and gore that's shown to you on the screen or the sex. It is because of your own imagination. That these are emotional, psychological thrillers. Right. Yeah, and I much prefer that kind of thing.
And then that same breath, right? In the same line of thought, when it comes to being a child, see the problem with most people is that we're a child, right? We have that infinite potential, that infinite creativity. It's endless, right? Yeah. But that's not actually anything in the real world. So like as we get into adulthood, we lose that inner child, but we actually start to manifest something. But unless we keep that inner child, we can't manifest what we truly want to. And so it's like you have to, as you get older, find a way to tap back into that inner child so you can manifest the things you want to. And, you know, but also realize that you have to actually be something, right? Because potential isn't actually anything. It's just potential. So it's like
my grandmother used to say that. She'd say potential doesn't mean shit unless you're doing something with it, honey.
Yeah. And so but it's true. But then also a lot of the times people lose that creativity entirely, right? Because the way, especially here, and I know your listeners are from all over, but no matter where you are, a lot of the times you're just taught to work, whether it's in the US or, you know, and that becomes survival becomes the main priority, whether it's paying bills, whether it's going down to the well to get water, whatever. Survival is the main priority. And the thing with survival, when you act out of survival mode all the time, very primitive, you know, you're not thinking deeply. You're not thinking creatively. It's all your solely focus is on survival. And so it's like, as you get older, it's having to peel back all the, whether it is indoctrination, whether it's trauma, whether it's, you know, scars that never fully healed, peeling all that back so you can finally get back to that inner kid that you once were, now that you're in adulthood. So now that when you're a kid, you can't do anything, but now that you're adult, if you still have that inner kid in you and access to that inner kid, you can make anything happen.
I think you're absolutely right. And it's a very astute observation because, you know, people talk about the inner child, and part of in my experience, part of what we call adulting is getting to parent yourself, parent your inner child the way that you needed a parent and maybe didn't get in your foundation, right? You get to be the parent that you didn't get to enjoy when you were a kid. You get to guide yourself with the wisdom that you're, you know. I also believe, and I think I'm onto something here. I'm interested in what you think. I think every child likewise has an inner adult. And that inner adult is, you know, regardless of who's raising you, it's that instinctual, maybe it's tied to survival. I think you're very right about that. Your sense of right and wrong, your sense of danger, your sense of trust, your sense of, right? I think a lot of those are blurred in young children, depending on how they're growing up, depending on what the adults are doing around them. You know, just like you said in the pandemic, you know, most younger people are looking to the internet for the life skills that they didn't get growing up at home or in school. Mm. Right. And I think it's that inner adult that helps one sort out what is true, what is right. And experimentation is a huge part of it. I'm a big proponent of experimentation in one's youth, whether it is sexually. I think that's really important. I think there's a difference between experimenting and promiscuity. Mm-hmm. I think the question is the root. Where is that coming from? Is it because I need to feel wanted? Is it because of my need to feel desirable? Is it because I need someone to look in my eyes and tell me I'm beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. Or because I didn't hear the words "I love you" growing up? Maybe that's, you know, you're one is tying sex to the emotion, right? But I think that journey of self-discovery, I'm not a big proponent of no sex before marriage kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I think it's important to discover who you are, what you like, so that not only you can identify that frequency, that matching frequency, someone who's on that same frequency, but also that you can be a giver, that you can respect the frequency that somebody else is on and be open to giving as well as receiving. It's a reciprocal thing. I view it as the individual as kind of this great cosmic radio, right? Yeah. Where you are the only individual on the planet that has the power to plug your radio into the juice, right?
Yeah.
Into the cosmic juice, get the electricity flowing through it. And then you're also the only one who can turn on the machine, right? Yeah. To become aware of frequency. And then you start turning the dial. And sometimes it's a very subtle movement. Sometimes you got to keep turning the dial to find something you match with. Maybe it is a particular song. Maybe it's a particular chat show or podcast or something that you really resonate with in that moment. And it's going to change the next day. Or maybe you're just into that one song and then the next one, not so much. So you change the dial again. That's the way I see humans interacting in the 21st century, is that we become first aware of our frequency. I think that's achievable in childhood if with the right parents. I think that's there.
You mentioned a lot of interesting points. So along the lines of the children having that inner adult, I feel like we all have a compass. And as we grow up and we have, you know, whether it's society, whether it's our upbringing with our, you know, our household, our culturally, whatever it may be, that's what points to the North Star. That's what create our North Star. So we're all built in with a compass. Our North Star gets created. And we all have different North Stars based on our experiences and the accumulation of all the different factors that play into that. But there's like a philosophical like question I like to ask, like in a world with, you know, no laws, no government, no religion of any sort, who's right and who's wrong? If everyone just followed their heart, and it that's what also helps me stay open-minded, right? Whatever it may be, of course, I'm going to think personally that some things are wrong. Yeah, but everyone is. But it's like getting to that, like that philosophical way of just questioning, and just in a world where, you know, no upbringings, you know, no laws, no rules, no anything, just kind of like absolute anarchy, right?
Yep.
Who's right and who's wrong? You can't say, right? And so it's like that compass, as you said, that inner adult that the children have, that compass, I feel like it gets formed. And then on a topic of like frequencies, there's a guy that everyone talks about, like law of attraction and things like that and stuff. Oh, yeah. But and it's starting to become more of a buzzword now. But there's a guy that I interviewed myself. I mean, he's big into quantum physics. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about the law of vibration, right? That's where it all stems from, is the vibration, right? And I like to say, you know, I'm the center of my world. I'm not the center of the world.
That's right.
And we 8 billion people, that's 8 billion different worlds that are taking place at the same time. But the world is just the world, right? And so it's like, and for my world, I am, you know, the creator. I am in charge of everything and how it plays out, but I can't control the world.
Shadow and Light LLC was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups, virtual or in-person book club meetings. For further information, go to psychologyprofessorandminister.com.
As you said, like finding that, fine-tuning our frequency, the higher levels of frequency that we have, we're going to attract everything on that plane. And the things on that plane is going to resonate with and are going to eventually manifest, right? It's vibration, then attract, then manifest. And finding which plane you want to be on, of course, for example, if you start to get to higher planes, like for me personally, it's hard for me. I love hip hop. I love rap. But it's hard for me because a lot of the time, the stuff that they talk about is just lower vibrational topics like drugs.
Where is that coming from? That's very often not even coming from the artists, but it's coming from the producers. It's coming from the money people.
Because exactly.
That's what sells.
Because right? That lower frequency. And on the topic of frequency, the frequency at which music is even played at is a bad frequency. I believe it's like 432. Like the actual hertz is like very bad for us. And so it's like, as you start getting to higher frequencies, you can't resonate. So like for me, I can't listen to rap or like hip hop or stuff like that as much. I barely listen to it ever unless I'm out. But like if I were to play a choice of songs, that it was not something I can willingly play. Of course, there's some songs that I still like and enjoy hearing, but you know, it's not something I intentionally go out of my way to listen to because I understand that, you know, that a lot of that stuff is very low vibrational. For example, like, there's a lot of things that, and we mentioned kind of promiscuity, but like one thing, having engaging in a partner, like a side, being a side dude or a side chick, like while someone, like things like that, low vibrational drugs, of course, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Very like low vibration, like cocaine and all these, you know, meth and all this. That's very low.
What do you think about these transcendental, like now that marijuana is decriminalized and now, you know, psilocybin and, you know, mushrooms are now being decriminalized. People having transcendental experiences through drugs. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah.
I'm really fascinated by the stories that I'm hearing and the matching experiences. Like even the multidimensional beings that people are encountering, you know, maybe somebody's doing ayahuasca in
Colombia.
And somebody is, you know, in Seattle, Washington, doing the same kind of thing. And they're meeting the same without any common history, without hearing from any other people. They're having similar experiences.
Yeah.
It's all relative, I think.
Yeah. You know? I think personally with the decriminalization of the marijuana and things like that, it's one of those can't beat them, join them. So we finally found a way to make money off of it type of things where they found a way to monetize it. And now it's like, okay, we can make money off of this. Like for example, cigarettes, You know, they knew how to make money off of cigarettes, so they were running it up. But, you know, now that they found a way to decriminalize marijuana and they'll still get their money from it, it's like, well, we banned it for so long, they're still doing it anyways. You know, how much longer are we going to try and ban it for? They're still going to do it. Might as well make money off it. So I feel like that's also a part of the decriminalization. But when it comes to the transcendental experiences, I never dabbled with any of that stuff. So I can't speak from personal experience, but from what I've heard and what I've, you know, learned, I was just listening to this interesting podcast with Tom Bilyeu. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name, Tom Bilyeu. And he was talking to a guy who's really knowledgeable on the stuff of like entering flow state and entering these different states of, you know, being. And what he was saying is that when it comes to a lot of that stuff, it's kind of like, and I'm going to paraphrase this because he did the research. He has the book on it. You know, yeah. the guy that Tom interviewed knows all this stuff. But when it comes to the transcendental experiences, what he was saying that a lot of the times now people are having these experiences and having these doing these things. And usually, you know, it's you test something out, then you have people scrutinize it and try to make sure it's wrong. And then people get out. But people are just going from the experience to sharing it as if it's, you know, actually a real without any actual information. They just have, you know, take a shroom one time, you go to planet, you know, planet Z and come back. And now it's like, yeah, I've seen all these different things. And it's like he was talking about the way it affects your brain and things like that. And how, like, that's why, like, when you are getting to these, some of these, you know, like, these flow state, your confidence, things like that, legally, you're not allowed to, you know, upsell and things like that. Cause your brain, when it reaches that state, it's more susceptible to taking risks, and it's decreases your long-term, thinking in terms of like, similar to alcohol, prevents your long-term thinking. And so it's very interesting. It's something that I'm not the most knowledgeable in. I've heard the same experience that a lot of these people seeing, you know, these, you know, different geometric patterns and shapes and things like that. And it's like, yeah. And so it's like, it's something that's interesting, something I probably won't dabble in, but you know, it's interesting to hear, because now that it's starting to get popular, it's starting to get, you know, more, I guess, information on it. It's not something I looked up too much, but it's interesting to see how that's playing out, because a lot of time people think with, like, for example, marijuana, something that I know, like, everyone says that, oh, they're more creative. It's not that they're more creative, it's that their brain, the way it works, is they think that new ideas are better than they actually are. So every idea they come up with just seems as if it's actually a better idea, because they're just more susceptible to thinking that anything that comes out of their brain is a good idea.
Well, I think that it's also important to distinctify somebody who is using drugs or mind-altering substances promiscuously.
Yeah.
You know, the way they would use sex or any other addiction, right? People are addicted to sex, addicted to porn, addicted to relationships, right?
Porn is another good one that I looked into quite a bit. And the way pornography affects your brain is insane. It's like the similar, if you looked at someone on cocaine in their brain on a scan, and like that, someone that's addicted to porn, the resemblance is crazy.
Oh yeah, and sugar is eight times more addictive than cocaine, even. So these things are all tied together. And when we look at the you know, we're talking specifically from an American perspective, right? I was born in America. I wasn't raised there, but I spent a lot of years in the United States, and so I have that experience. But you know, you look at so much of the world, especially in America. You get it a little less maybe in other countries and in the rural communities of other countries, where people are still living off the land, they're still raising their own food, and there aren't any, you know, Monsanto and factory farms and all that stuff hasn't hit there yet. You can't get away from it. You can't get away from the promotion of addiction as a way of life in the developed world. And it starts at your first birthday, when you're fed cake and ice cream, and your first Halloween, and your first Christmas, and your first Easter, and your first Valentine's Day. It's all centered around sugar. Thanksgiving, you know, and you name it, right? It's all centered around the sugar addiction. That
Yeah.
also then leads to, I remember growing up where there were cigarette commercials on TV. You know, everybody and their mother smoked on talk shows. People were sitting there smoking,
Yeah.
drinking, you know. That's it. When you hear something often enough, you're apt to believe it. And when young people, especially, and younger and younger children are being exposed to images and philosophies and you know, even especially growing up in certain communities where drugs are readily available to them for not a
Yeah.
lot of money, and that's again, I believe, by design. What they're not being taught, what we're not teaching our children and our adolescents, is that your body chemistry is not done developing until you're well into your 20s. And so
Yeah.
anything that you're messing with biologically now in your tweens and teens, and it's again getting younger, right? I know kids 9, 10 years old who are smoking.
Yeah.
That's going to affect your biology as an adult long
Yeah.
term. It takes a long time to flush all that out of your system and get clean. Balance, pain mitigation, range of motion, athletic performance, focus, memory, immune system support, and REM level of sleep. All this and more made possible affordably with no pharmaceuticals, no injections, or invasive treatments. Just socks, insoles, and patches made stronger with the tactile patterning of VoxLife products. Scientifically proven to work and guaranteed. Now in the USA, Canada, and the UK. Visit www.dianedinkmeyer.voxlife.com. That's Vox, VoxX, Life. You'll be glad you did. What do you think is maybe not the answer, but an answer
Yeah.
in fixing this rampant problem? Is it fixable?
I believe so. I grew up in a project. As I said, I had friends that smoked, drank, sold drugs, so the whole nine yards, right? And I was always aware of what they did, and I never got myself involved, right? So it has to do a lot with, with upbringing, honestly. That's where it starts earn for me. Knowing, as I said, knowing both sides of the coin and knowing what one leads to early on, it definitely helped out a lot. And I think that's also a start because a lot of times, especially as a kid, you're not thinking long term. Your prefrontal cortex isn't even fully developed yet, right? Mine isn't even fully developed yet,
It's
right? I feel
not.
like I'm very wise, but like I know that mine isn't fully developed yet, right? So I'm more susceptible to something than someone 10 years older than me, 20, 30 years older than me is,
Hard.
right? And but like I know, I always knew where certain things led to. And as I said, I knew what I didn't want. And is that a lifestyle that you want where you're affected and you can't think? And I don't think, I don't, because we're wired as humans to do what we're told not to do. So
Right.
if you take it out and say, no, this is bad, don't do it, that is definitely the entire opposite way to go about it.
It's
So
actually really important that you said that because this is a whole other podcast we have to do together.
yeah.
Is that it has been proven psychologically that boys do not register the word don't. When you tell them don't, it's like telling them do. Right? And we
Really?
often tell boys, especially boys, not that it doesn't happen with girls too, but I think to a larger degree with men.
Yeah.
And this fucks us up, man, for the rest of our adulthood, unless we talk about it,
Yeah.
is when we are given that guidance to, you know, or we are, you know, we associate a choice that somebody else deems as wrong with punishment or pain, right, that's inflicted on a child. What does that do to the psyche? What does that do to the way that a man walks through the world or a woman, but you know, somebody who my question is, and let's wrap it up, because I know we've been going almost an hour. We'll call it a special. We'll go a little longer. But this happens even within families, right?
Yeah.
That people who are growing up in the same environment or similar environment, whether it's your own family, whether it's your neighborhood, with the same influences, exactly, the same music, the same images, the same videos that are viral on YouTube, the same, you know, things that happen behind closed doors in childhood at home. What's the difference between you and your friend who has been down almost an identical path? What is it in you uniquely? And part of what I'm getting at is what you said earlier about you are your own self-contained universe. You are the center of your universe, not everyone's, but your own. You have your own journey. But there are common factors of people growing up, especially in an environment like the projects, where you have very similar experiences. What distinctifies you and where you are at 21 from somebody else that you know who has gone down a different road, who doesn't have the wisdom that you have? What would you say is, give me three key differences.
The first one, and we mentioned this in a conversation before, is open-mindedness, right? Being able to see the different perspectives and what that leads to. Like, awareness is power, right? Mm-hmm. And knowing certain things earlier on, being open to like seeing certain things involuntarily, most of it. I didn't want to see drugs and all these other stuff. I didn't want to see people smoke. My grandma smoked. She had cigarettes. I didn't want to see a lot of that stuff, but I knew that's something I never wanted to do, right? And so like that open-mindedness definitely is, like I say, the one of the most important factors, because as I said, if you think your way is right, because a lot of, you know, people my age too, or especially people older too, but you can't tell them anything. Once they're stuck in their ways, they're stuck in their ways. And so having that open mind is extremely important. Step number two is to be optimistic. You know, realize that life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you. And it's not, as I said, we're the center of our own universes, not the universe, right? And so it's like, if something, whether it's something extremely traumatic, right, you may not understand. Everyone always asks, like, why me? Why does it happen to me? Why does, you know, why do you have to go? Why? You know, it's like, that is a stupid question. Don't ask why. It doesn't matter. And you probably never get the answer to it. The right question is,
that's my comeback, is why not?
Yeah, why not you? Right, exactly. And then, so it's like more so, okay, now that this terrible thing has happened to me, you know, who is going through this right now that I can help get through it? And who could I help so that they never have to go through it, right? And that's why I said we're not the center of the world, right? It's bigger than us, right? This, wherever, you know, whatever, however egotistical or narcissistic or self-centered you may be, we're this is a bigger picture. And then regardless of whatever faith or denomination or whatever, it's a bigger picture. It's bigger than us. It'll always be bigger than us. So realizing that life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you, right? You may not understand why, but that's, you know, part of your journey. It's part of your pursuit of figuring out the answer to it, right? Part of the search for the truth, right? And so having that open mind, being very optimistic, the glass is always half full on my end, right? And I say the third thing that anyone could easily start applying is that to be grateful for everything, every single thing, bad, good, indifferent, everything, you know, be grateful. Gratitude is the highest form of energy. And so if you practice gratitude often, if you're grateful, I always like to say, if you can't, you know, be grateful for like the little things, you'll never be grateful for the big things. The big things might never even come your way. So it's like being able to practice that gratitude and be grateful for all that you have, good, as I said, good, bad, and different. And that's just going to help you get a, you know, a better outlook on things. And everything that happened, if you take some time to shift the perspective and learn from it, is a great thing, but it shifted because it helped, you know, you survive through it regardless of how bad it may be. And so it's like practicing that gratitude, and then, you know, to then implement step two of life doesn't happen to you, happens for you. And now that that's happened, be grateful that it happened. And now it's like, all right, who can I help make sure they never have to go through this? And if they are going through this, how can I get them to the other side?
John, you're a rare jewel among young men. I think that's that you have a very, very powerful and important voice that needs to be heard. I'm really excited to keep exploring your Walk to Wealth podcast. There are many, many versions of wealth. It's not always tied to money. Sometimes it can be wealthy in wisdom, which you certainly are. And I'm grateful for this hour because it's really helped me open my eyes and give me a little bit hope for the future because it's, you know, I mean, this world generationally, one generation after another has said, we're the ones to fix it for the next generation.
Yeah.
We're the ones that are going to remove the stones out of the path of the next generation coming up. But, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can spend your life removing these boulders out of the path of everybody else.
Mm.
But that's their path. That's not your path. It's not for you to say and identify what a boulder is or how to, you know, tell somebody how to maneuver around the boulders. All you do is be an example for other people, people younger than you, but also people older than you, to look at you and say, wow, if John Mendez can do that, maybe I can too.
Yeah, definitely. Right? And in that same breath, right, it's sometimes the best thing you could do for people is let them suffer and struggle and continue on your journey. And
that's sometimes the best thing. Let them come to you for wisdom. Don't follow people around chasing people down saying, you should do this, right? One of the things that I made a promise to myself when I started the Lost Traveler podcast was that I was not going to have guests on who were promoting a book saying, this is the way to achieve this. You know, this is the only way. Here is your you know, the Bible of
self-management.
Or, you know, I have all the answers. Click here, you know, to find all the answers. You know, I'm not going to have those people on. I want people like yourself who have an open mind, who are on a journey of exploration.
Yeah.
And have a very real conversation about these universal qualities that anybody in the world can identify with and say, oh, wow, that's a piece of information that I didn't have before. I'm going to try it. You can't use my tools the way I use because you're not me. But what you can do is you can lay out your own toolkit and you can synthesize and experiment with the tools that I'm sharing and fuse them to your tools and create unique tools for your own journey. That's what it's all about. That's what this is all. Listen, I know you got to go. I got to go. Let's plan a part two sometime.
Definitely.
This is great.
Definitely. And I love the topics we kind of discussed too. Definitely got into deep into, you know, a couple of interesting, you know, viewpoints and perspective that you don't normally get to share too often. So I genuinely enjoyed, you know, I feel like you helped me come to new conclusions while I was mid conversation. So it's like, it was interesting, you know, figuring out, you know, what I've learned and like applying that in a way, like actually putting in some of the things I've been able to accumulate finally into the discussion. So I definitely enjoyed the level that you pushed the best out of me today, I feel.
Beautiful. Likewise. And let's stay in touch.
Definitely.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and happy 2023. This is a great first episode for the new year. I'm grateful you were here. Thanks so much, John.
You've been listening to Season 3 of the Lost Traveler Podcast with your host, Henry Cameron Allen. Visit me online at www.henryallen.org. Thank you to all my guests, and thank you to my listeners all around the world. I couldn't do this without your support. Let's keep striving for a better world together.